WUSB, Stony Brook.
Now the time is 6:40. We're in Washington, D.C. We will depart once station work is complete. There's no estimated time. Once we complete our engine change, we're switching right now from the diesel to electric. We'll make our way to following stops at Baltimore, Wilmington, Philadelphia, Trenton, Newark, and New York City only. If you have any special requests to your destination, please speak to your coach attendant or train crew member as we come by prior to that station's up if you need special services. Also note, right now as we're doing the motor change for your own safety, please either remain inside the body of the train or outside. Do not stay on the vestibules or staircase while we're doing the motor change. Of course, the engine's not attached to the train. The restrooms will not function. Please wait till the power comes back on to use the restrooms once again. Food service car is closed at this time. We'll make an announcement that food service car reopens again. And also, this will be your last smoking break stop after leaving Washington. Any of the remaining station stops is discharge only. We're not picking up new customers, so we'll be in and out of each station stop. So please only step off the train to tend to exit. Please listen for all exit announcements when to gather your belongings. Do not gather your belongings when you arrive at the station. This may delay the train and delay services to you. Baltimore Penn Station, first stop once we get our equipment change, 35 to 40 minutes once we depart the station. Thank you.
Wow. We're in Washington, D.C. on a train with no power.
Yes, the capital of the United States of America.
A city with no power. No, just kidding. We are on a train that. We have lights in our room, but that big orange light is on that says "out of service, toilet out of service." He mentioned the bathrooms, and yeah, you're not supposed to use the bathrooms while you don't have an engine because there's no power and it won't flush. What they're doing now is they're connecting an electric engine so that we can take the Northeast Corridor and use the electric lines and go a lot faster. But while they're connecting that locomotive, you are not supposed to use the toilet, so that's understood.
Right. It takes a significant amount of power to run all the other things, including, I think, ventilation. That's why it's so quiet in here. Usually there's air and all kinds of fans blowing, but we're just, conserving heat. It's very cold outside. It's been cold. There's a bit of a winter chill that's sort of overtaking the East Coast.
It's nowhere near as cold as it was when we were going through other states in the Midwest, like Kentucky and Iowa before. On the other train, it was like minus 17 Celsius. It's minus 1 Celsius now here. So it's somewhat warmer, but it's still pretty cold for this time of year. But, I don't want to dwell upon this. But the whole bathroom situation on this train, this is the Cardinal. It runs three times a week between Chicago and New York. Great train, really is. And we have some things to say about its history. But somebody had the brilliant idea to put all the toilets in the roomettes. It's a very small room. And literally, I've read about this online too, it's right next to a bed so that your traveling companion, if they have to go in the middle of the night, is literally doing that right next to you sleeping. And they advise that you put your feet on that end, not your head, which makes a lot of sense. But the feet doesn't make that much sense to me, honestly. And when I saw that, I commented on it. I didn't think it would be so much of a problem because I figured there'd be the same amount of restrooms that there were on the other train, the Superliner, that has two stories. But no, that you're expected to use this. And, I've read that Europeans are aghast when they find out about this because this is not normal, not something they're used to, having a toilet right next to your bed.
And it takes up a lot of room in the roomettes. If you didn't have this entire area for a sink and toilet and so on, you would probably have wider seats. You would probably be able to be a bit more comfortable. And so what? They remove one or two roomettes at the end of the hall. I mean, there is a shower at the end of the hall, but it should have at least one or two bathrooms as well.
Yeah, if they put, one bathroom on the end of each car, then they could not have a toilet in every single roomette. and that would save a lot of space. And may I also point out the sink. The sink folds out. We haven't really played with that very much, but it's kind of like a table. You pull it out. there's a big red light that lights up when you do that says sink down. Like, you need a light to tell you that the sink is down. It's right there next to the light. You can obviously see the sink is down. I don't know who designed this. I'd like to have a word with them, but...
No, and that's the key, the design. This was designed in a certain way, but the thing I think we're pointing out is that it was functionally, you know, it's designed in one way, but functionally not really assessed, like, how will people actually behave around these amenities? And what we've noticed is functionally, people won't use the toilets that are in their roomette, and instead they go wandering trying to find other bathrooms. The only other bathroom is a handicap bathroom in one of the cafe cars, and it is disgusting. It smells like a barn.
Well, it wasn't disgusting at the beginning, but it's gotten disgusting. And I just had a traumatic experience there, too, because I tried to use that, and somebody was in it, and they didn't lock the door. And it wasn't my fault, I swear, but I'm sorry to that poor lady.
But it's got a badly placed indicator light as well, which they didn't use, so the light wasn't...
Yeah, it doesn't matter if they don't lock the door.
But it's around the corner. So if you walk up to the door handle, you wouldn't know, and you'd have to look around the corner to see it if it's on.
Yeah, but I'd know when the door doesn't open because it's locked.
Right, so if it's unlocked, you'd
have... Do you think I could actually force the door by pulling it hard? Because you do have to pull that door hard. Maybe I forced the lock, and maybe she did lock it, and I couldn't see the light because it was around the corner?
I don't know. I mean, it seems like the lock is pretty substantial. Like, if it was fully locked and the light was on, there's one inside, there's one outside, but the outside one's around the corner, but you would have to really break that lock to actually engage and open the door.
So people coming one way can see the light, but people coming the other way can't.
Cannot, yes. And that's...
And you know what? Those are the people with the roommates. So I guess they assume, why would you want to see the light? Why would you want to use this bathroom? That bathroom's not for you. It's for the people coming from the other direction.
Yep.
My God, this has been a nightmare bathroom-wise. But everything else has been awesome. I just wish they got this right. Even the roomettes, I think, are ingeniously designed, because when you put the beds down, it's like a whole different room. You have two beds with a lot of space, really.
Way more ceiling space. There's no ceiling space in the double super liner, but the view liners with these retractable beds, they come down very easily on slides or some kind of springs, and it just glides down and locks in place on top of the seats below, and then the seats below slide out into a bed. So everybody has at least 4 feet from the bed up to the ceiling, and the upper deck is pretty much the same way, as you've lowered it and given yourself more ceiling height.
You're comparing the roomette on the Viewliner to the room on the Superliner and saying that the roomette has more room than the room, which is exactly the opposite of what it's supposed to be. But yeah, it's true, because those Superliners are two stories. You literally don't... When you climb up to the second bunk, you have to twist yourself like a pretzel to get into a place where you can be comfortable.
Well, that's exactly what I'm saying. Imagine going into a roomette in the Superliner.
I can't. I can't imagine that.
Exactly. So I am comparing the two different styles of train.
I'm worried there might be people still trapped in roomettes on the Superliners, because if they're tinier than what we were in before, I just don't see how there's any space whatsoever. When literally, if you sit up in the middle of the night more than, say, a 30-degree angle, you will hit your head on the ceiling, on the second floor, on the second bunk, that is. So, yeah, that's... I don't know why... Is space that much of a premium that they have to make it so incredibly tiny?
Yeah, it's the over-budgeting, or the sort of under-researching of what they need. They just made it to design to a spec that assumes a certain volume of passengers, or that, look, if people are using this, we want this many rooms to fill it up and sell this many seats. But that's not really a good functional assessment when you really consider the kind of traffic they encounter. And it seems like just some simple adjustments, like one less roomette per car or on one or the other of the trains, little simple adjustments would at least make what they do have more functional. But my hope is whatever they replace these with, or if these are ever refurbished, like completely gutted and then redone, they make a lot of changes based on feedback and based on what actually works when you're out rolling around on the rails.
Yeah, Amtrak, call us before you make any redesigns on these things, because we have some notes, and you know, it works well. And the people, like I said before, the people who work on these trains are simply amazing. They look after every need. They know what's going on. They're the most competent people ever. And just it's a joy just to listen to them interacting with each other, too, just telling stories about different trains and routes and experiences and things like that. That's what it's all about. Another thing that it's all about is the dining car. And unfortunately, on the Cardinal, they got rid of the dining car. In fact, they got rid of it on October 1st of 2019. And that's a tragedy, because that's really where you meet people. That's where you have fun experiences and good conversations. What they've replaced it with is basically a cafe car. Meals are still included for sleeper passengers, but it's a far cry from the actual full kitchen that the other longer routes still have, but maybe those are in danger as well. What they got rid of their other cafe car, so there's an empty cafe car. It's kind of weird. You walk through and there's a cafe car and then a really tiny business class section. It's six rows of people traveling business class in half a cafe car, and the cafe part isn't being used. And then you have another car similar to that, which is the new dining car. But you only get packaged meals. You don't get things that are cooked in a kitchen like you used to.
Yeah, they're all TV dinner style and basically just microwaved, reheated. And they have a select amount of drinks and so on. But it's not the same. They don't have the same staffing. They don't have the same seating arrangement. And it loses the energy. I remember on the Superliner, we had, the staff blasting some of their playlists. You know, they had good music and they were having a good time in there, and it was that love, that like care that went into it. And you know, the same thing was going on when they're putting together your meals. And what we've learned is that there's at least half a dozen people there. In for example, the cook is I guess partnered with a food specialist or a nutritionist. So they're basically preparing the things, but there's someone down there also making sure the ingredients are right, making sure it's fresh, making sure the portions are correct, and so on. And it's a lot more of an operation. And for the longer routes, it's great. But we remember those longer routes having even more. They had wine tastings and trivia and different activities that centered around the dining car in between meals. But as they reduce these services, they're eliminating staff that what we're told by just chatting up some of the crew are specializing in that. In other words, the cook is not someone who's trained to also work in the cafe. The cook just cooks on the train and so on.
Although the guy we got on our first train leaving New York said he used to be a cook and was our attendant. So it does happen sometimes. But you're right. It's really a lost opportunity when they cut these services, and the people who are trained to do these jobs no longer have a job to do. It's a mistake. It's a big mistake for Amtrak to be cutting things that are so popular. When people take these rides, the dining car is where you meet other people traveling, because you sit at the same table with strangers. And that's another thing. Every Amtrak employee we talk to got the company line that the reason they're eliminating these services is because millennials, get this, millennials don't like to travel with strangers. They don't like to sit across a table with somebody they don't know. They'd rather have food in their rooms and be on their phones. I don't think that's true. Because first of all, most of the people who travel on these trains aren't millennials, but we have talked to people who are, and they are just as open as anybody else. I think that's a false accusation, and I think it's just an excuse to cut funds. I'm a little concerned because the current CEO of Amtrak used to be the CEO of Delta Airlines, and that could foretell all kinds of cost-cutting measures and airline-like policies. So I really hope they reconsider this, that customers speak up, and that they restore the things that really make these trips the amazing trips they are.
Yeah, when I hear that, I hope that some of those, you know, transferring of things from one industry to the other don't really become the norm, because some of that stuff just doesn't fit the same model, and it really is discounting a lot of what people are delighted by when they actually take a train trip. And I think that would be a really big loss. And my reaction is basically that, like, okay, if you're going to make those cost cuts, like, that better not just be for shareholders or something. They better be buying rail and, you know, doing capital improvements or investing in new rolling cars and so on. But if it's just a way to slim up the business and have a big profit taking, I think that's like, that is the most crass and vapid of a choice as far as management goes. And it's tone deaf to what I think a lot of people as customers and as crew members would agree are essential and important, and what really make these trips what they are, the unique parts of it. If you take that out of it and make it too much like airlines, what then is left? I mean, I think the delight and the joy in having a different travel experience is why people come back, and people from around the world. As we said earlier, there's been people from really far-flung places, as well as people we wouldn't ordinarily have conversations with, because this is the closest form of travel to where they live. They can't go 8 hours to an airport. They get on the train if they want to get anywhere. And that is, you know, that is lost, those connections and that, conversation with other Americans is completely lost, because, you know, you're making a choice, a calculated choice over meals. Well, how would we end up seating for you know, dinner or lunch with someone? That's a huge loss. And again, the crew that, you know, maybe trained as a chef and then transferred to another thing, that may have been like the beginning of this wave of change. As other crew members have said, they're trained on multiple jobs, and that really reminds me of what broadcast was doing when I was in school. Photographers would have to be producers and satellite truck operators. You'd have to do like four different jobs because they didn't want to have large crews. So if you were a photographer, you also had to know how to, you know, broadcast with the truck or produce or edit. You had to do everything, and that's the kind of environment they're training you for. And I hope that's not a trend, because it's taking away from the real charm, what charm there is when mm-hmm. you are kind of crammed in and on a long journey.
Well, it is a trend, unfortunately. Hopefully we can reverse that trend, because rail travel is one of the few things left that has retained its charm over the decades. And it's such a great way to see the country. Wow, the scenery we saw earlier today, we were going through West Virginia and Kentucky and places like that. And, you know, we've been to these states before, but you don't really get to go down the back roads and see the places that only a train track can travel through. We saw, the lights just came on. So I guess we're hooked up to the new engine. I didn't feel any bumps, so that was very smooth. We saw so many things, and you see America in ways that you would never see it, even driving, but certainly you wouldn't see it on an airplane. And as one person that we were dining with said, it makes you proud to be an American. And, you know, that might sound kind of gung-ho, but, you know, if you're going to be proud about something, be proud about the nature that is surrounding us and that is part of our home. That is something that I'm super proud of when I see. I see mountains and I see forest and desert landscape, and, you know, all from the comfort of a room or a dining table or a seat. It's a fantastic way to see things and to also hear other people's stories.
Yeah, you really do get to see the way of life. I mean, this train in particular only comes a couple of days a week, so there were a number of parts of this leg, this line, that people would wave, they would come out to see, or they would stop whatever they were doing just to admire the train going by, because that was a big deal. That's only something they're going to see ever so often, and otherwise they're kind of isolated, or at least, you know, removed. They're out way out there. I was also fascinated by the size of a place like West Virginia. It was a very long trip through there, and a lot of the industrial stuff they're doing is right up against the backdrop of hills and these really remote natural areas. you don't get that when you hear about West Virginia in the media or when we're, you know, thinking of it as, you know, from afar. It's more of an immediate thing when you're able to associate the look and just a sample of the way of life that people are experiencing there.
We saw a lot of coal mines. In fact, Kyle, we heard this earlier in the day while we were traveling. This I don't know if this woman got on the train or if just they started playing a recording, but basically she was kind of like a tour guide, and she was pointing out all the important parts or scenic parts of West Virginia as we were passing by, and it was really entertaining to hear. I'm only sorry that I wasn't able to record her actually pointing out these amazing places.
Yeah, but a lot of what she was talking about was coal.
You know what? I did record some of it. Here's one.
Across the river is the town of Glasgow's American Electric Power Plant. Around 1960, it had been named three times as the world's most efficient steam-generating plant. Today, it is no longer in operation and is scheduled for demolition.
But yeah, you're right. She mentioned coal in just about every other description, constantly talking about, because there's a lot of coal. But, you know, I'm thinking, okay, you know, coal is done. We're finished with coal. Let's do something else. And it's an amazing landscape. There's so much that can be done. And it's just, you see the potential. You see the promise of these places. Rather than just flying over them and not thinking about them, you see the people, you see the houses, the structures, the architecture, the natural resources that are there. And I don't know, that gives me hope.
As we enter the town of East Bank, we will be passing on your left the oldest Catholic church in Kanawha County, the Little White Good Shepherd Catholic Church. East Bank is better known as the childhood home of national basketball great Jerry West of the Los Angeles Lakers. The NBA logo of a silhouetted player is that of Jerry West. Recently, President Trump awarded Jerry a Medal of Freedom, the highest civilian honor.
Yeah, and I appreciate it historically, and like there were little snippets where she would say, yes, coal has been on the decline, although it has leveled off in the past, you know, years. I think that's as political as it got, but I really think that discounts what people from those areas are capable of. To consider your history is one thing, but to basically distill what people are about to this one industry, I think is a real... a disservice to people who are far more capable and creative and probably would love to do anything else were there opportunities.
But, you know, you go through these small towns, and we really do go through these really small towns, and you wonder, what do people think here about the rest of the country? Basically, you see a coal plant or some other kind of manufacturing plant in the distance, and you realize most of the town must work there or be dependent on that in some way. And to just simply expect them to change, how easy is that for them? How do we make that happen? Lots of things we take for granted. You don't really see as realistic or unrealistic until you've walked around and seen the lives that people are leading. And that's when you come up with ideas how this might work. How can we get through this together?
Yeah, and you have to remember that it's not just about exploiting resources. There are human resources that are being exploited as well. These people are not living, you know, high on the hog or you know, making all kinds of money. They're surviving because this is the industry that's there supporting them. If there were other opportunities, they would probably take advantage of them. But, you know, knowing that something's consistent, knowing that it's been there, it's hard to extract yourself from that. But don't get it wrong. There is absolutely more exploitation beyond just minerals. There are, you know, human resources also being extracted and exploited, and they're really just able to survive. So it's something that if it is addressed, it needs to be a thoughtful and really comprehensive thing, such that people aren't left sort of abandoned by industry.
And they need to be part of the conversation. So that's really, really important. And it's just one of the many thoughts you have traveling through this part of the country. And actually, we're in a different part now because now we're in Washington, D.C. And as you've heard, the power has come back on. We now have an electric engine that's about to start pulling us. And something else that's interesting about the Cardinal is that it uses the Northeast corridor, but it doesn't act like the other Northeast regional trains do. In that it doesn't accept any passengers. They'll let people off at the stops mentioned earlier, but they won't take any new passengers. And the reason for that is because this is a long-distance train. It's meant to take care of those people who are traveling long distances. If you start letting people on or just taking short trips, then there are less seats for the people who are there for the long haul, and it's just changes the whole mood. And it's an interesting aspect of the whole thing that I hadn't really thought of before, but that's how this works.
Yeah, and it splits the service from other services like the Northeast Regional, which operates much more regularly and at a higher frequency. So it's very silly, really, if there are other lines that they can sell customers interested in those short trips. There's really no reason to be adding them to these longer distance trains.
I thought we were moving, but it's a train next to us that's moving. I think that's going to Richmond, it says. So that's going the other direction. That's an Amtrak train as well. But we should be starting any moment now. Boy, it looks like that guy's about to back into the train. The forklift operator on the platform, he knows what he's doing. There's no question about that. But wow. This is the last leg of the trip, Washington, D.C., and a couple of stops, then New York City. And, of course, the real last leg is the LIRR. That's going to be a lot of fun. But are you sick of trains yet?
No.
Well, I kind of want to get off the train and have some space to move about for a bit.
Yeah, I guess that's fair. I don't think I can watch them on YouTube or anything. I think I need, a break.
I have a real bathroom. Not this toilet seat next to the seat. How'd you sleep last night?
I was freezing cold.
Okay, well, that was a miscommunication. Apparently, I said I liked the room cold, but I didn't like it that cold, but I fell asleep. So, you kept it cold to your own detriment.
Basically, I was fully clothed by the time I got out of bed because I was incrementally adding clothing. I put on my corduroy pants, then a sweatshirt, and then a hat, and eventually felt warm about 15 minutes before I got up.
It's better for you if you sleep in the cold than if you sleep in something that's too warm. So comfort yourself with that.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. I can see you're going to do that. But I slept pretty well, considering. The thing about the roomettes is that the beds are parallel to the track as opposed to perpendicular, which means that the train rocks and you can get thrown around quite a bit. But it didn't bother me this time.
No, I think the track was really, really smooth in the particular area we were overnighting.
But the one thing that did bother me, and I hate to keep coming back to this, I mentioned where the toilet is. Well, that means that next door, our neighbor, his toilet is right by my head. And I was woken up by the sound of that thing flushing. And, boy, it makes a lot of noise. But also, when you realize what's going on prior to that, inches away from your head, it bugs me, okay? This is not my scene. And I just hope they come up with something a little roomier and more discreet.
Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be on this move shortly. We're for the baggage department. They're taking some pallets off the train and the baggage. Had to wait on them. That's why the reason is delay out of the station. To apologize for this, our first stop once we get moving is Baltimore Penn, 35 to 40 minutes once we get the signal. So again, we'll be moved shortly. We're just waiting for the baggage department to finish working service work in the back of the train. Apologize for the delay out of the station.
It's always good to have somebody to blame. When this train left Chicago, it was the food and beverage car, and now it's the baggage.
Yeah, I got more information on that. Apparently, the pipes were frozen. It was so cold in Chicago, they were having trouble adding water or removing water, or something was frozen.
Wow. So, okay. By the way, I'm watching the guy in the forklift with the pallets. The baggage car is next to us, so he's literally loading things as we speak into that car, which is the one right ahead of us.
It's worth mentioning that Amtrak does provide freight service, so we could move pallets around. We've thought about it in the past.
Well, we're moving a box at least, so this is kind of interesting. We didn't want to carry this box with us, so we gave it to them in Seattle. And it's checked all the way through to New York City. Doesn't cost anything. And it probably didn't go the same trains that we went. It couldn't have gone the same trains that we went because as you recall, in Chicago, we literally ran across the platform to get to the next train with seconds to spare. And we didn't see the package doing that. So it went some other way. And hopefully it's waiting for us at Penn Station in New York. But we'll find out.
Well, it's a good test. It's a good test. And I trust them. And we packed it very, very well. There was a lot of tape. We even put a little bit of rope on it, so it's got one of those nice old school handles that feels like it's really going on a journey.
As I continue to load the train here, it looks like they have some work ahead of them. We need to stop because we actually have to do another live radio show in a few minutes, because there's no end to the things that we do while we're traveling on trains, and we've been working pretty much the whole time doing all kinds of other projects as well. So it's a bit of relaxation, it's a bit of fun, but it's also work, and it's also a challenge to get through it all. There are so many things that you have to adjust for, and that's part of traveling. That's the fun of it too. They might be done here because they're pulling away with a whole lot of packages. Look at all those packages.
A pallet of bicycles, and I see a lot of wine, and another pallet that looks like smaller boxes.
But here comes another forklift with he's empty. Okay, they're just driving around the platforms of forklifts. That looks like fun, actually.
He's got a pallet jack on a pallet.
And we're moving just like that. Look at that. We just started moving. I love when the train moves and you don't realize it's moving.
Yeah, it's a special event.
That's that old train two tracks over that you noticed before with an old engine. It looks like the lights are out. Looks like the lights have been out on that for a long time.
Yes, I don't know what that engine was. It's older looking, and I don't know if it's exactly electric or diesel or what, but it appears, it said V60 on the front. Tallahassee, that's the dining car?
Well, there's people in there, so that might be a special kind of train.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, first stop is Baltimore, about 35 to 40 minutes. Baltimore, Penn Station will be next.
Yeah, there's actually a Penn Station in Baltimore, there's a Penn Station in Newark, and of course there's a Penn Station in New York. That doesn't compare to the number of union stations there are in this country and in Canada as well. It is a view liner that we're looking at across the tracks. I think that's heading south. So many different routes. We have to check out a bunch. I heard people talking about the horseshoe curve on the Pittsburgh line. We've never taken that. That would be fun. But there are other ones, too, throughout the country. There's one that goes past Maine or up to Maine. Other smaller services, and there's at least one big service we haven't taken, which is from Texas to Chicago, so we have to do that as well. But for now, we're on, this is our sixth train in this cross country and back trip that we have taken. Six trains, imagine that. We could have done four, could have done, two in each direction, but six was more fun.
Well, we saved the best for last.
Yeah, I guess we did. I guess in some ways, not in the dining car way, not in the bathroom way, but certainly the people way, because the crew here is amazing.
No, I wasn't talking about this train, but yeah.
All right. Well, as we pull out of Washington, D.C., and think of the cities we've seen. We've seen Chicago. We've seen Portland, Sacramento. Of course, we went to Seattle and Denver. We walked through a part of the station there as well, and now Washington, D.C.
Yep, and we're on our way to Baltimore.
And Trenton. Don't forget Trenton.
Yes. Yes, Trenton. Trenton, we're not going to take anything from you.
No, but keep making stuff and somebody else will take it. All right, well, that's it for us. We have other things to do right now. Looking forward to a smooth ride and becoming reintegrated into society. Until next time. Oh, we're back. We're back. Yes, here we are at WUSB Stony Brook, where
everything sounds lovely.
It does, doesn't it? Well, we haven't been on the air live in a long time. Why does it sound so weird?
I don't know. I think there's another microphone on.
Well, that would make it
not sound as weird.
It sounds tinny.
It sounds like there's a speaker on somewhere. You know what? I'm going
to... Well, I'll just sit here. I wanted to talk about how I was since you asked.
Let me hit the reset button.
You know,
there.
The funny bone...
That didn't help.
Everybody talks about the funny bone, but what happens when it's not funny? Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, that's a little better.
Is it?
Yeah.
You know, I think the weirdness is only in our own headphones. I think so. Nobody else. Yeah. If we listen to the air feed, it sounds echoey. If we listen to the board feed, it sounds fine. So let's just do that.
Just another day, another mystery.
I'm sorry, listeners. We don't mean to give you our troubles. But yeah, we're back. We've been back for a month, actually, listening with bated breath to all these train shows that we've been doing. They've been fun. They've been, you know, it was really a fun experience. Traveling all the way across the country, then traveling all the way back via trains and via a different route. So that's the magic that you can embark upon. And it's you know, you have a place to stay, you have your meals covered, so it's comparable to traveling in different ways.
Yes, and you get to experience that all-connected network of rail that does exist here in the U.S., counter to what you might think and might be told. It is... not the most popular way of travel, but it should be, and it deserves it.
We've gotten so much mail, too, from people that here's someone saying that I enjoy your travel shows so much when you're not in the studio, when you're traveling to distant cities. Someone else said you should leave more often and go places as long as you're not in the local area. I'm pleased as punch, I believe is what they said. Get out, travel more, stay away, and it goes into all caps after that. But we got so many bits of email, and we appreciate them all. Thank you. Thank you, people, for sending us these. Please continue, otw@2600.com. If you have suggestions for places that we should go or places that we should not be around, we want to hear it.
Yeah, thanks for that.
Yeah, thanks so much.
We invite other comments, maybe suggestions, too, places... that, you know, you've been that we haven't.
Exactly.
We're open. That's what we're trying to say.
But, wide open. Wide
but we're
open.
Also back here. We're back, and gosh, so much has happened. Where do we even start? Current
Brexit,
events?
Brexit. Oh. Oh, my God. Oh, okay. Well, we don't have much time, this so we can't really go into a whole lot of detail. But boy, they had the election in England, and I got to say, you know, I was pushing for a second referendum. I have to admit at this point, England, you're going to get what you deserve. And maybe that's a good thing in your eyes, but I don't think it's a very good thing. Kind of think Jeremy Corbyn really kind of screwed everybody over because he couldn't see past his own ego to step down before the election and have somebody more popular run. Obviously, the guy's not popular. Everyone knows it. Whether you like him or not, you got to admit to that fact. And I hope this is something that Democrats can learn from, that, you know, you might believe in somebody, but if they don't get the votes, you're going to lose the damn election. So Jeremy Corbyn lost the election, and at that point, he said, okay, I'm going to step down now because nobody likes me.
He took the hint?
Yeah, but why didn't he take the hint beforehand? So,
that's
yeah,
the
people voted for Boris Johnson in droves. And, well, they didn't vote for him. They voted for his party. You know, it's interesting. I looked this up. Everybody who is a prime minister is also a local minister, right? You have to be a local representative of some sort, and then you become the prime minister. What happens if you lose your local election while you're the prime minister? Turns out this has happened a couple of times. Technically, you can't be prime minister anymore, but what you can do, which is kind of a dick move, is appoint yourself a lord, and then you become part of the House of Lords, and then you reign from there. But people don't really do that. It's such a weird system. But here's what's going to happen now. Brexit is probably going to sail through because there's a lot more conservatives now in power. And
they feel they have a mandate.
Yeah, they do. It's hard to disagree with that now. It really is. But Scotland doesn't quite feel the same way. And it was fascinating watching the Scottish returns coming in because the Liberal Democrats kind of got kicked out in preference to the SNP, the Scottish Nationalist Party, or National Party, I guess, who are referred to as nationalists because they support independence, and the Liberal Democrats don't. So, you know, they all have these really liberal agendas. You know, they're for gay marriage, they're for healthcare, all kinds of things that we constantly are debating here in this country. But there, it's you know, it's basically who's more liberal than the next. So the Liberal Democrats are out and the Scottish Nationalists are in. They're referred to as nationalists, but I don't think in a bad way, because, you know, independence is a good move for them, especially in light of Brexit. So they're pretty much giving the middle finger to England, saying, we don't want any part of this. And in a couple of years, we're going to have another referendum, which Boris Johnson might try to block. And if he does that, there could be civil unrest. So now you're looking at that. Also, Northern Ireland is suddenly looking at reunification with Ireland, you know, the Republic of Ireland. So what might have happened here as a result of this election, yeah, okay, great, rah-rah for Brexit, but you're losing the United Kingdom. There won't be a United Kingdom, or what they refer to as a rump United Kingdom. Remember rump Yugoslavia? That was when it was just Serbia and Montenegro, because everybody else left. Same thing's going to happen to the United Kingdom. So England, that's what you wanted? You wanted to lose your kingdom? Okay. I'm good with that.
Yeah, they're not leaving. They're not leaving the EU with as much of their extant territory and influence as they might purport in the initial discussions about that, because these fall on effects and parts of that kingdom that are not necessarily as willing as what these referendums are showing, at least at this point with Boris Johnson.
Yeah, it's interesting, and it's going to get more interesting because January 31st, that's supposedly when the deadline is for Brexit to actually take place. Is it going to happen this time? More likely that something will happen. Then you'll start seeing the effects of it, and then you'll start seeing more reaction from those people who aren't so thrilled with the idea. But as far as moving forward, pretty much decided now. This was the opportunity for people in the United Kingdom to really say they didn't want Brexit. Unfortunately, you had an unpopular guy who wasn't even representing that point of view, who basically was going to renegotiate something and then put a second referendum out to the people. But nobody liked him, or the people that did like him weren't in the majority, and they couldn't deal with that reality. And now they're in the situation they're in, so it's going to be fun. But you know what? It doesn't compare to the situation we're in, because we're dealing with impeachment. Impeachment tomorrow, Kyle. Impeachment. Did you get your impeachment cake?
Yeah, no, I did. And they're going to be all kinds of festivities at my
there,
place.
There really will be, because this doesn't happen very often. It only happens once every 20 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
Last time was Bill Clinton, and the time before that was in the 1800s. So it's... if you're living through this for the first time, it's don't be afraid. It's something that is a part of a democratic society. But what is not a part of the democratic society is the way it's being treated by some of our elected representatives. Oh my God, have you seen some of these senators?
It's ridiculous. It's just like it pales in comparison to the kinds of obstruction we'd seen before in the previous investigations and so on. I'm thinking Mueller, I'm thinking, you know, all the other stuff we've seen. This has become so polar, and just there are just people in one corner or the other, and really not much movement. And now, so today they're having the hearings on procedures and so on, and
House committee versus House committee,
exactly.
That kind of thing.
Yep. This is all before it is sent on over to the Senate, and
well,
you know.
Here's the thing with the Senate. Okay, you got your Senator Mitch McConnell, you got your Senator Lindsey Graham.
Yeah,
Lindsey Graham saying, you know, I'm not going to pretend I'm impartial. I've already made up my mind. Mitch McConnell.
It's pretty disappointing.
Saying that he is coordinating closely with the White House counsel. Here's the thing. I've got this little document here, Senate Impeachment Rules, dated March 2nd, 1868. And one of those items is the oath that they must swear to or affirm. There's a difference, but it basically means the same thing in the end. I solemnly swear or affirm, as the case may be, that in all things appertaining to the trial of the impeachment of blank, now pending, I will do impartial justice according to the Constitution and laws, so help me God. All right. So what that means is that they have to be impartial. They've already said they're not impartial. They're not going to be impartial. They have no intention of it.
Never intended to be.
So when they take this oath, they should be led away in handcuffs, or at least taken out of the trial, because they are not playing by those rules there. They will be lying. God himself is going to take an interest in this, because they will be lying at that point. So are we going to do anything about this? Are we just going to let this slide? It's really kind of insane. And the other thing that really kind of gets me is how these guys seem to think they're in charge. Well, they're not in charge. The Chief Justice, he's the one in charge of the trial. And, you know, I've been trying to find out a straight answer to this, but I'm pretty sure Chief Justice, the guy who is overseeing the whole thing, he can decide to call witnesses. He can make decisions like that. It's not up to the jury to decide if witnesses come in. Of course, this trial is not really like regular trials, but there are certain rules that still must be followed. And it just seems like these guys have absolutely no intention of following those rules. But Chief Justice John Roberts is known for standing up for the Constitution and what is right. His powers aren't unlimited. Any member of the Senate has the right to object to his evidentiary decisions, and if the Chief Justice stands firm in his opinion, the senator may demand a vote of the members of the Senate on any such question with a simple majority sufficient to overturn the ruling. But the Senate's authority is strictly constrained by the rules it has itself established, and while it can reverse particular rulings, it can't bar anybody from appearing as a witness. Instead, it's up to the lawyers representing the House and the President to make those critical decisions. And, of course, the decision whether to have witnesses at all doesn't seem like it's in the hands of Mitch McConnell or Lindsey Graham or any of those people.
Yeah, I would just take away, and what I've been hearing a lot of this is just how careful both sides should be in the procedural regards. I mean, just the hearings today over procedure and these types of things. And so far as who's called witness-wise, today they were harping on the whole minority day. Basically, minority representatives feel they're due a day to participate and question various people. They've been trying to call in Adam Schiff and so on and so forth. And it's amounting to sort of side politics over how the impeachment is done to try to impugn the credibility of one or the other side. And so that's kind of where you're going insofar as the logical extent once it gets over into the Senate. So it's very interesting to watch, and I think it shouldn't be handled carelessly. I think no one, wherever you stand or whatever your opinion is, should really not be watching it closely.
Well, we'll have more time to talk about this in obviously the weeks ahead, as we have very little time this week. But there is an article I suggest people read in Politico. It's entitled, "Here's One Surprising Way Congress Could Avoid an Impeachment Disaster." Well, your definition of disaster may vary, but here's the thing. When the House votes to impeach tomorrow, they don't have to actually send it to the Senate for a trial. Yeah. They can completely just hold on to that until such time as the Senate actually is taking this seriously. So if it's if you have people like Lindsey Graham and Mitch McConnell basically saying they have no intention of being fair about this, well, then you wait. And Trump is still impeached. And maybe they reconsider and act like adults, and that's when you have a real trial. Maybe you hold on to it until the Senate changes and there's more Democrats in the Senate. I don't know. But they don't have to release this right now, and they don't have to basically bow to pressure. I don't know. I would just like to see them take a stronger stance. That would be nice.
And the long view, right? Like, haste makes waste. This isn't something that should be just thrown together. And I think that's part of the argument that the minority is trying to make. But both sides, I think, should be very, very careful about, missteps and, how this is how it occurs.
All right. Well, now we are racing through features here. And this is our film. Do we ever name this Film Corner?
Which are we starting?
This is where we tell people about the film we saw the last... we're kind of behind on this, so we're just going to do 1961. But we're actually a little bit ahead because so much time has gone by since the last time we did this. We have seen the Academy Award-winning pictures year by year, both domestic and foreign.
Best of the best.
Best of the best. And 1961, there was what was it, an Ingmar Bergman film that we saw as the foreign film?
I see you're starting with the foreign stuff. Yes.
Of course, why not? Yes.
Yeah. Ingmar Bergman. The title of this film is called Through a Glass Darkly. It is a Swedish film, and it's... It's in that language, Sasom I anspegel, as okay. In a mirror, is the translation. 1961, family drama.
Well, I don't know if it was a family drama. It was.
There was family.
It was about a family, and there certainly was drama. It took place on an island. An island, by the way, that Ingmar Bergman eventually wound up living on. It's a father, his son, his daughter, and the daughter's husband, who also was a doctor.
Yeah, he's also treating the daughter, and she suffers mental illness, basically comes back from a bout of schizophrenia in an institution of sorts, and is in the house. And the father's writing. He's doing this sort of novel, and really that's his sort of primary focus.
And he's trying to write.
He's trying. But he's having a bit of difficulty. And it turns out she's still suffering these episodes, and sort of confides in her brother and is trying.
Everyone's suffering episodes.
Yeah,
though. I mean, he starts bawling in a room by himself. I don't know exactly why.
From his father, because his father's so consumed.
No, I meant the father started crying.
Oh, I'm sorry.
The
yeah.
son is also kind of messed up because his dad won't talk to him. And then the husband of the daughter.
Well, they perform a play, and the father feels rejected or at least upset because the play could be sort of interpreted as a critique of him and his character.
If there's not enough drama for you, there's drama within the drama because they put on a play that's supposed to mirror some of the events that are going on. It was good. I mean, I liked it a lot. It's black and white. It's very kind of got this
lonely.
Yeah, lonely feel to it.
Cerebral, lonely.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There's a storm scene it just feels cold and wet, and you know that it has that maritime feel. There's a lot of confusion, identity, and the relationships get kind of murky. There's some incestuous stuff going on, and it just is a really sort of difficult. It's very hard to watch. I felt very disturbed throughout. I'll have to admit, it wasn't like a calm, sort of easy watch of a story. This was kind of nerve-wracking, and just it just had me... writhing a little throughout. I had a little difficulty, but mostly because it's about sort of this schizophrenia and this girl who's really living dual lives and having visions and just these very sort of bizarre interactions. So it gives you this uneasiness.
And it's basically presented like a play in a couple of acts, only four people in the film. And in the end, she goes completely psycho bananas. And what a great scene, too. She really nails it and is taken away in an ambulance, which is actually a helicopter because they're on a remote island. Very dramatic. Very good. We recommend it.
Cinematography is outstanding.
That's right. Through a Glass Darkly, 1961. Ingmar Bergman.
Stunning.
And our domestic film for 1961. You might have heard of it.
West Side Story.
West Side Story. What?
Full color.
What is it? Full color. And filmed in a part of New York City known as Lincoln Square, which no longer exists because that's now Lincoln Center.
Yeah, it was an area that was slated for demolition, so it was vacant, and they were able to recreate the city block and film there because it was abandoned. And it is stunning, really an amazing, amazing job. The color stock they used and just the vividness of it really shows... a Broadway sort of theatrical feel, and it is a musical production. There's dance numbers and a lot of singing throughout. It reminded me of An American in Paris a little bit, which we'd seen also a stunning color production and not done on location. This had it sort of intertwined. You had stuff that was on location in New York and then stuff that was sort of a soundstage. Incredible design. You could barely tell some of the soundstage stuff, and you know, you'd be under a highway or under a railroad trestle or something enormous that you'd just be amazed at how they built these large fences and produced all of the sets that make you feel like you're still in the city, whether it's you can't really tell basically seamlessly
yeah.
between these location shots that are truly, you know, New York in full color, and then the sets where they're doing large dance
numbers. It is done so well, and it feels like it could have been filmed yesterday, just the amazing quality.
And if you don't know the plot, it is sort of a Romeo and Juliet type story. It's basically rival gangs, the Jets and the Sharks, and a love story ensues, obviously, between one or the other. One individual who's each of them whom are members of one of the other gangs.
Yeah, absolutely. Recommend it. The music is incredible. If nothing else, listen to the soundtrack. In fact, we're going to feature a song from the soundtrack on our way out of here. But West Side Story, the Academy Award-winning film from 1961. And next week we'll get into what we've seen since then, which is at least a couple of years since then. Hey, check this out. Amtrak actually replied to our tweet before that we were doing an Amtrak show. They say, "We hope you have been enjoying your trip with us. Thanks for the continued support, Emmanuel." Amtrak said that.
Wow.
Well, it's great to know Amtrak is out there paying attention to what we're doing, because we're certainly paying attention to what you're doing and hope it, it gets better and stronger and bigger. Rail in this country definitely has a lot of potential.
Buy some more rail and, keep improving it. We could do a whole show on the track report, just all the construction and maintenance and track geometry that we saw, but we don't have time.
No, there's not enough time for that. But, hey, we're going to go out with an interpretation of one of the best songs in West Side Story, a song that certainly continues to age well, a film that continues to age well. And we hope more people take time and visit the past and learn from it and share it, because that's part of the magic. And it's part of the magic of being here at WUSB, back on Off the Wall. Write to us, otw@2600.com. We'd love to hear from you. And we'll be back next week with all kinds of cool things.
Indeed. Have a good night, everyone.
Bye.
See you later.